We're ready.
Go ahead and get our council meeting started for Wednesday, June 26th at 7:05 p.m. We are meeting in the Springfield Community Center. We are going to start with a pledge led by Councilmember Miller and an invocation to the White House.
Our audience, please rise. Join me in the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Dear Father in heaven, we thank you for this day that blesses us with this opportunity to consider leaders and discuss the business of this day. We ask that you bless us with thy spirit and make the right choices. And this is we say in Jesus Christ's name.
Amen. For that, I'm going to have to see an approval of the agenda.
I move that we approve the agenda for 2026.
Motion made by Councilmember Miller. Is there a second? Second by Councilmember Geddes. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? We'll move on to public comment. It doesn't look like anybody signed up for public comment. Okay, so what was the public comment portion of the meeting and move on to our consent agenda? If somebody wants to make a motion regarding those minutes.
I move that we approve the consent agenda.
Motion made by Councilmember Anderson. Is there a second? Seconded by Councilmember Ellsworth. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Now, motion passes. We'll move on to items 5 and 6 of your reports of business. Starting with Mr. Goodwin.
Yeah, we've had, I want to report on the golf course. We've had a big month this last month. The courses look great, so I want to commend the staff for working so hard. We've had a number of tournaments on the course, and we've received a lot of really positive feedback. Also, on the rec department, please look for sign-ups on our website. There are summer leagues and programs available for children of all kinds of bowling, golf, and Legos and sports, so go look there. Creekside Theater runs through July 1st. That's Monday, so you can see the city website for more information. They're putting on a few productions. And a couple other notes. Canyon Heights Road will be resurfaced next week. The work begins next Monday, so there will be some short-term road closures. So look for some detours there. More information will be sent out to the residents up there, so we can stay in touch with them and get them the information they need. We would like to welcome our newest Public Works Assistant Director, Kevin Anderson. He came from Sandy, Oregon. He started on Monday. We're excited to have him on our staff. And then finally, we would like to thank Lone Peak Fire for many years of service in our city. And we look forward to a new chapter in the city with American Fork Fire. That's all I have.
Thank you. Councilmember Anderson.
I attended my meeting with the Central Utah 911, and it was like 17 minutes long, so you know, that was all right. But they talked about a new sort of program that they're using called iSpy Fire. It's a new kind of software. They share events with all the responders around. It cuts down radio time. They share details by SMS. Anyway, they're trying to make it more efficient with all the emergency responders. You can actually, there's a map, you can see all the emergency events happening all around in the Central Utah 911 district. And it was really interesting. Anyway, they're trying to cut down, you know, response times and share information faster so that the responders have more information going into that situation. That was really interesting. But other than that, I have nothing to do.
As far as my first of all, guys, I have not been very good about sending you guys the updates, and so I have a lot to just update you on, and I apologize. I need to get better at that. But anyway, for those of you who have heard, American Fork is having a meeting at Town Hall tomorrow. It's open house tomorrow to talk about what they're planning on doing with fiber in their city. And I know that a few of you talked about interests with that as well. So Tamara and I do have a meeting later this week to see what some of these other cities are doing and look at some of our options, and we'll report back to the council. But I just wanted you guys all to know that we know that other cities are doing some other things, and we are proactively reaching out to find out how that might work for our city. So we'll let you know what we hear. We, just as an FYI, we are also installing a speed trailer. It's a speed
Speed sign indicator.
Speed sign indicator on the top of lights in that area that we get all the time when you're coming down that curve. So you'll see that coming up here soon. You may have seen it on Facebook already, but we had that meeting here where PG Irrigation talked about that ditch that they are building and how that's going to impact water that we have going through our little creek. And so staff is looking at possibility of getting water pumped up to the top of Heritage Park just to keep those trees basically watered so that way we don't lose those trees. We don't know yet if it's going to be an option or how much it's going to cost, but I just wanted to be aware that staff is looking into that and some options that we have to help keep those beautiful big trees down on the Heritage Creek alive after that is all ditched. I did attend a Utah Lake Commission meeting. I think you guys are all aware that we are now members of the Utah Lake Commission. They received 11 proposals for algae treatments in Utah Lake, and they are going through the process of, they're going to select maybe two or three and try in different areas to see how that goes. So they're in the process of reviewing all those RFPs and will be selecting a few people to see what they can do about that. They want to have, they're having all these events happening all around the lake to try to get people using the lake more often and to know that there's things to do there. They are talking about doing a Dutch oven cooking class in July in Saratoga Springs. So if you don't follow them on Facebook, just find the Utah Lake Commission and they keep you updated with all the things that they're doing around the lake. Just trying to encourage people to be out there using that area. And then as part of that meeting, DEQ was there for It's a Free Utah Water. And just as an FYI, they were telling us about that all the reservoirs are looking great, they're filling up quickly. And I was telling Chandler and Joel, there's one called Upper Stillwater Reservoirs. They said it's filling and it's the next couple of weeks, and apparently it's spectacular sight to see. It's a bigger drop than I ever thought. So it's kind of over the next couple of weeks. It's always filling for a couple of weeks. Go up there and see it.
Do you went to?
Yeah, he gave me these directions. Like, you go to Duchesne and make a left at the only light. And anyway, so Upper Stillwater, it's like a 3-hour drive, I think. So it's not filter. Yes. We are still working on on the county form of government, change of the form of government. It looks like there is support from two of the commissioners to put it on the ballot this year. After the committee has made that recommendation, so. If you have any questions on that, feel free to let me know, but it looks like that is going to move forward this year with your fingers crossed. A few of us were able to attend the swearing-in ceremony with American Folk Choir the other night. There were so many people there. I was really impressed. It was a huge event. And I talked to a few of the firefighters there that night. They're excited to be here. They're excited to start engaging in some PR and community events that they talked about. One of them said, you know, just want seniors to feel like we're just part of the same community. And so if it's your kid's birthday, bring them to the fire station and we'll sing happy birthday to them. And I'm just going to really tout AF fire just to get under Greg's collar a little bit. Anyway, they're really excited to be part of the community, and they're going to start getting this information to put in the weekly news just to start letting residents know that they're here and how they want to engage in the community that way. Senator Romney has a new outreach specialist in the area. Chandler and I met with her a few weeks ago. He's really interested in just knowing what things that we're dealing with that he can help with. He talked a little bit about zip codes and sales tax and how that plays out, so she's going to do some more research on that. But if there's anything that you feel like Senator Romney can be helping in our city with, please just let us know, because Chandler and I will have to get a hold of this new coordinator. She's really anxious to help out any she can. And then, just the last thing, if you haven't seen it, we all received an email from Congressman McGavin's office about the Tobacco 21 Roundtable next week. Everyone from the council is invited, so you can be there. That would be great. They really want to talk about Cedar Hills and Lehigh and how our efforts help at the state level and how they help at the federal level. And then I will also be going to St. George in September to the Tobacco Prevention Conference to speak there about our FOCT as well. So it's nice that people are recognizing that we had some community that discussion on that report. And I will do better about emailing you guys so that way I'm not too much of my energy. Councilmember Davis. Councilmember Davis. Councilmember Davis. All right. So we will move on to our scheduled items of public hearings. The first item, number 7, review action of public hearing on amendments to City Code Title 10, Chapter 3, regarding removing the open space and non-buildable lot provisions identified on the United Heights Plat Map, Plat G, Lot 14. That's long.
Hopefully it doesn't have to be a long discussion, so. So the lot in question is owned by Mr. Nate Miller, who is in attendance with the engineer who put this together. So they can answer any questions, Brian. Sure. Look, Mr. Miller lives in, this is Tim Cove Road, and you're heading up to the park. Canyon Heights Drive is just down the street here, and so you come up to the cul-de-sac and the park at the end of the street there. Mr. Miller lives on Lot 13, and his home's perk was built in 2014, 2015. And during that time, 2015, the city sold him Lot 14 here. Lot 14 was owned by the city. If you zoom in on this, it does say that Lot 14. This is hard to read, but that's a non-buildable open space. The reason that it's non-buildable open space is that up on this area, there's a number of easements that run through the property. The homes here have a 50-foot from the property line right here to this main gray line here. It's a 50-foot power line easement, so you know it's owned by Rockwell Power Supply. So they have limitations on their rear setbacks and what they can do to develop. There's a main line here that is kind of a 90-degree angle. That is owned by the aqueduct easement. It's the Salt Lake Sandy Aqueduct. And then the city, if you were to look at the natural drainage swells, I believe on this page there are 5-foot increments. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. So each one of these dashed lines represent a grade variation of 5 feet. So as you see it, it kind of curves at this point. That's a natural drainage swell where water drains off the side of the mountain and comes into the city's storm drain system. There's an inlet box here where it comes in into the retention basin just below, but it collects up above on the mountainside and brings it into the city system kind of away from those homes. Mr. Miller owns both of these lots, as I mentioned, but he would like to combine them into one lot, and he would like to be able to expand both of his home a bit by building to the south. So what that entails is, if you're looking at this illustrates it very nicely. You can see the original footprint of his home, and you can see where he'd like to make an addition. The addition is on, it's on fill material, but it's going to be, the proposed renovation is fairly deep, as we've discussed in the past. So it would be on native ground, is that correct? So it wouldn't be built on fill material, it would be built on native ground. But where he's building it, it is relatively flat. And then you can see that the grade variation, you can see where the drainage swell comes through. It's quite steep in front of the home and then to the south. So as you go outside. But what we need to do is we need to be able to combine these two lots into one. We need to be able to remove the open space provision and allow him to build, because that would allow these setbacks to be measured from the new property line rather than the existing property line. The concerns from staff on this, we've worked with the engineer, we've worked with the planning commission on this to alleviate the concerns that staff had. One of the concerns that staff had was we want to be able to make sure that in addition to the power line easement that's on the back side of the house and the aqueduct easement that's there, we want to show for the city storm drain system, because that's why this was not in the open space, was because of that storm drain. The second concern related to the safety of the home, the safety of the expansion of the home. In some areas of the city where homes are adjacent to steep slopes, you see what's called a structural limit line. And we wanted to show that
just because your new property line was much farther away from your home, you're still limited in where your home can be just due to natural variations in the land. We don't want to put anything at risk here. So this cross-hatched area shows it quite nicely. You see the new proposed addition, and this cross-hatched area would be the non-buildable area of the lot. So it takes into consideration that there's an area of the new portion of the lot that's added to it that is buildable, but the addition to his existing lot is not entirely buildable. The concerns raised by the neighbors, we had a public hearing in the Planning Commission, I believe it was in March or April, but a number of neighbors came to express concern that they didn't want to see this drainage swell be blocked and possibly compromise the neighborhood in terms of flooding issues. I don't believe that this proposal does that in any way, any different than any liabilities that we have outside right now. If there is a burn scar back there from natural fire and there's a flood, this home's not going to change anything on that. We can still have a flood issue. But we still need to have these repairs to be able to go in and maintain that storm drain. Is there anything I'm missing? You want to add anything? Jeff, is there anything you'd like to add?
I think that's good.
What questions can I answer from the council?
What's the distance from the building out to the hatch area about that standard setback?
Well, the setback would actually be measured from this line, because this is the new property line.
But isn't our setback about 12 feet?
Up there, I believe it's a little bit more.
It's 12 feet.
Okay. But the setback is actually measured from, this would be the new rear property line. It's just that we're identifying all of this as non-buildable open space. We could technically build up to this line right here. This just identifies the beginning of non-buildable open space. Actually, sorry, non-buildable area, not open space.
What's the gray area behind there again?
This is the Utah Power and Light.
Oh, that's it.
So you can see this is where the house ends, right here. So we really don't have very useful backyards up in this area.
Any other questions from the council?
I'm just curious about what that is that you're going to add on your house.
It's actually just a half-court gym with a deck up top.
Awesome.
So the motion is to remove the open. Let me add one more thing. One other concern that staff had was that whenever we do a subdivision, we do require that a certain percentage of the land is dedicated to the city as open space. Canyon Heights was developed through a number of phases. So if you're to go pull the plats, you have plat A, B, C, D, all the way up to G, I believe. This is one of the later ones. The open space provisions that we require from subdivisions was met for the entire subdivision prior to this one being adopted. This does not change any open space provisions that we would require from the development. So we're not compromising the amount of open space that this subdivision needs to have by doing this.
Okay,
we're
forward.
Well, he retains ownership of it. The easement is drafted such that he essentially, in some ways, doesn't own it because it's so aggressive that he can't do it.
It really has to stay as is.
Yeah.
So it didn't affect the open space requirements either.
So before a motion is made, we also have a public hearing on this, so I need to officially open the public hearing for this item. Is there anybody here who wants to speak during the public hearing? Okay, so we'll close the public hearing and back to the council. Unless there are any further questions from the council, I will
take them. I was just going to ask, you said the Planning Commission brought up some concerns, and those were addressed by staff.
It was the same concerns as staff and the public brought up in terms of being able to maintain the easement, making sure the building, any future building, didn't compromise the easements, and then the open space provisions. Those were the concerns. We resolved those through a couple of variations in the draft about the recording of the plat, which is this document right here. So we'll show it as being one lot. This is the structure limit line right here. You see the P&L easement still intact, the aqueduct easement still intact, and the storm rain easement is showing in favor of, just as the storm rain easement, but it's in favor of the city. So those were the concerns that they brought up, and that's why the planning commission, I believe, in March, April, May, announced to the city council. We resolve at this point, so we resolve those concerns.
All right, council, I'll take a motion.
I'll go ahead and make a motion that we approve the alteration of the underwriting zoning provision of Canyon Heights by G Lot 14 by removing the open space and non-buildable lot designations identified on the map and allowing for the properties to be joined in one parcel.
Motion made by Councilmember Ellisworth, seconded by Councilmember Bailey. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. So we'll move on to item number 8, which is a review action for the hearing on a resolution adopting fiscal year 2019 budget. Yes. They come to Charlotte.
This is Charlotte.
Yes, you're you address me for questions that you have.
Yes, all right. I couldn't be here last time we had a budget presentation. Chandler was very kind of step in my eyes. Very gracious. Huge budget amendments, really. But we need to go over them. Just mostly clean things up. With the Cedar Canyon development and all the review that went into that area, we had some additional building permits and client check fees and engineering related to that. So there is some adjustments to that. And then...
Well, I have a question on that one. Okay. Is that the $20,000 increase in energy?
Yes.
And is that primarily Walden Commons?
Yes.
Here we go.
That's mostly Walden Commons.
That was also reimbursed by the developer.
So why is it only this an increase on the transfers?
It shows up still as an expense, and it shows up on the revenue side. It doesn't go in. The revenue and the expense don't go in the same account.
Okay. So, because it's considered the same. You said building permit, not project fee, so
just
trying to.
Yeah. So
let me ask you kind of a general question.
Okay.
We just hired a new public works system, right?
Right.
So my personal feeling is that, don't take this wrong, but having dealt with them, I believe Bowman and Collins kind of has an open checkbook in our city. I feel like they can just charge whatever they want, whatever they want. And so I'm hoping that maybe with our new system we can eliminate some of that outsourcing that we do to go to college.
He's not an engineer.
Is that possible? And I'm just speaking as a, I guess, that personal experience. And I don't know. I feel like in the past they just bill whatever they want, nobody ever checks it, and we just are expecting them to pay whatever they want.
Yeah.
there could be some areas where he can be present for inspections, but him not being an engineer, we're still limited to our contractual services with Bowen Collins. But as a staff, we've tried to be more cognizant of how we bring Bowen Collins into the equation in terms of what days they're here, how long they're here, where they are, making sure that if they're here for the city, let's look at a few different projects rather than just one come paper travel twice. So there could be some savings, but we have to realize that he's our new employee is not an engineer, so they're not going to be reviewing plans.
He's got every certification that he can other than an engineer. He's got a lot of great experience. So he will be a great asset to the city, but it's challenging in our small city. This full-time engineer probably, I don't know how they would allocate their costs on some of these things, but for all these special projects, you may usually outsource them and hire Bowen and Collins or someone else anyway, and it's only general services that they might save us some money on, but almost everything else, you have electrical engineers, civil engineers, water engineers, and like David, he had to outsource almost everything even though he's an engineer.
So is he qualified to do civil inspections then?
What type of civil inspections?
Like inspect the sewer main that's going in right now for the development of drinking water.
Assume his certifications. Jeff, do you know the answer to that question?
I think we run a fine line in between those. The city staff would be qualified to do, like you're saying, the underground inspections, sewer lines, water lines, et cetera, to the point where you get into the testing. And we would not be able to complete the testing aspects of the construction. We are tight a little bit, and we'll get into that on a different agenda item, but our city code addresses so many of our aspects of the work that is required that the city engineer reviews, city engineer approve, etc. Some of that we probably could address authorizing public works director or similar to being able to do some of that that doesn't require an official stamp from an engineer or testing certifications. But yeah, I think there's some room to look at some in-house tasks. I don't know that that would, it would probably reduce the cost slightly because of the hourly difference in, or the rate, hourly rate difference. But yeah, no, I can see where there's a concern there.
Well, I mean, I'm speaking as a developer now. The inspection fees for our city for development is probably the highest in the valley because we take a percentage of the overall cost and lump it in as inspection fees. And I can't remember what it is, but it's pretty high. Whereas most cities have, if you have a plat map, you pay so much for the plat map plus so much per lot. And so you know what you're, I mean, of course we know in ours it's a budget, but I always feel like it's a high budget and the inspecting entity knows the amount and they bill to the amount. And I'm not always sure it's proper or accurate as a personal experience person.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that happening.
Fine, maybe that's future discussion, but because we have a new person, I was wondering, maybe that would, maybe you can tell I have a little bias here.
And just for information, the jurisdiction that he recently left, he did do inspections similar to what you're talking about, other than certified testing and engineered staff projects.
I know that's it.
I think one thing we can do as a staff is evaluate in our city code where the engineer is required by code and evaluate that need, since we no longer have a city engineer on staff, and saying what items here can we bring in-house in order to reduce some of those costs. Because as a staff, when it says the city engineer is the responsible person for doing an inspection or signing off on a project, we don't have an option. We send it to Bowen and Collins, and that's where that cost is incurred. So if we did an audit of our code, we can find out where we can make changes and bring things in-house to run it cheaper.
What about, you know, what if we revise our contract with Bowen and Collins to make their maximum be similar to other cities?
They may not be interested in providing the service.
Right, they might not.
It's a conversation we can have, though.
We can discuss it.
But I think they still got another year or two.
But there's an out clause always.
There's always an out clause, so, but we might want to just say on these certain areas it seems you're a little high and we want a better price.
And it may be that at the term of the contract, we have to talk about going and doing another RFQ on that.
Yeah. Anyways, I'm sure there's things that we can look at. The street light operation, I entered the amount earlier in March, and this is just I think it has filled me in, left $200, so it looks weird. Recreation and Family Festival growth, that this is coming from Community Services, Greg, what he was recommending. Now there's going to be a transfer to park reservations, because some of the, I think park reservations used to be paid through Express Bill Pay on Seamless, and now it's been going through Rec One, like the rec programs, and so manually it all just gets clumped together, and we manually enter in, it all starts in rec programs, and then I need to get the details from Greg and reclass park reservations. So some of that money will be moved from rec programs to park reservations. After June, when he has the final numbers. The other part is a transfer to the capital projects fund for Harlan Park. I'm surprised we were able to do this, but back in January, when I was talking to the bond rating agencies, I'm like, based on loan peak payout and what we transfer so far, we'll probably go down to 10%. But it still looks like with this transfer, we'll still be above 15%, and which is fantastic. I guess it's about 2 months, which we want for rainy days. And so that's really the amendments. There's not a lot, but those are the amendments.
All right, any questions for Charlotte? We have to make a motion. It is a public hearing, so I need to just open the public hearing. Is there anyone who wants to speak about these amendments? Okay, we will close the public hearing. Advisory Council, any further discussion? No, I will make a motion.
I'll make a motion. I move that we adopt resolution number 6-26-2019A, a resolution adopting the amended 2018-2019 fiscal year budget for the City of Cedar Hills, Utah.
Motion made by Councilmember Anderson. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Councilmember Ellsworth. Councilmember Ellsworth.
Aye.
Councilmember Bailey.
Aye.
Councilmember Geddes.
Aye.
Councilmember Miller.
Aye.
Councilmember Anderson.
Aye.
Motion passes. We will move on to item number 9, review action and public hearing on a resolution adopting the fiscal year 2020 budget.
Okay. I don't know why the signal's not.
I can tell you why. You got two inputs.
Oh, it's any parameters. about some of the priorities this upcoming budget year. Included the following technology updates. We currently have like 2010 Office, and we need to get into the current. That was good in 2012, but it's not so good right now. And there's some updates for policies that we need to work on. Planning and capital improvements include mostly related to water. And Harvey Park is under city outdoor improvements. As far as that goes, we were able to do a lot of that engineering in Harvey Park, and we were able to get a lot more than we anticipated.
I'll just need to make sure Colleen has a copy.
The tree management plan is out there as well, and the engineers did look at our path and bridge and didn't see anything that was urgent, but they recommended some studies, and so we have to look at that and see if that makes sense. St. Andrews updated his plan to make it look nicer. New event signage, some of that's already happened. Updated business plans for community services. And then I think admin's working on evaluating staff and compensation over the next year. So just some economic information you're probably already aware of, but unemployment's really low right now. There's been a lot of jobs added to Utah. Personal income grew 5.9%, which was higher than the national rate. House prices went up almost 10% in the fourth quarter, and the outlook's supposed to moderate, but still supposed to be healthy. This is according to the University of Utah Gardner Policy Institute in May. We've also, though, there's some concerns because of the bond markets and volatility in the stock markets, people, and what's going on internationally. So there has been an inverted yield curve for the first time in 10 years, and usually when that happens, there's a recession. So that's something to keep in mind. This time, I was just reading some were initially thinking there would be a rate cut of 0.5, but now they're seeing maybe 0.25, which shows that there's not as much concern as So in the general fund, here's some highlights. Most of the growth is due to sales tax revenue. We have the long-term public safety contract we just entered into with AM Police and Fire, which should help stabilize this the level of service and the cost over the long term. Some of the revenues related, just the way it was budgeted before, changed. So no longer get a rental income, and so that was absorbed into the contract, and we had to add utilities at a cost. So that's some things you'll notice as a difference from the last time we looked at the budget. Also, another change is because Harvey Park will be open maybe next year, and if we take over the park maintenance, we have to understand the derivation. And so there is someone to help. There would be a more experienced staff would learn that, but also if they're spending time doing that, they would have someone fill in that's an entry-level staff for the last 3 months of the year. The current projected classy gross revenues are 445 based on, I think, what the mayor gave me. And then there was some updates to garbage and recycling revenues based on the changes with waste management, just trying to make each rate kind of more equitable between based on their actual cost. And then we have new park expenditures because of the taking over staffing, and there's some related motor pool costs for motors and truck. And then there's a proposed 4% increase for city staff and governing body. Well, it's dark in here. But you can see the dash line pretty well, and that's the current fiscal year sales tax growth compared to prior years. So we've just had a consistent, a little bit above the prior year, pretty much every month, with a couple of exceptions. Since we're going to be talking about this a little bit later, here's some background on what other cities are accruing for the amount on their operations, property tax. So we will accrue $720,000 out of fund, as if they do the certified tax rate, they will propose $560,000 more than this. And they're the next closest, and they're going to do
a tax increase this year.
Okay, so something higher than that. With, I saw Highland is proposing $700,000 more than their certified tax rate of $2 million. So that's like our whole operating property tax in one rate increase. So we are. We might have some of the highest utility rates, but our operating rate is pretty low. Our operating amount, so per household. We have similar population up on Linden, and Highland's not quite twice as much as us. So that's what the population looks like in the last couple of estimates. Lehigh is definitely the fastest growing in the Eagle Mountain. So originally we'd estimated around 732, it went down. That was based on what we got the previous year, which was 740, but we had some greenbelt in the commercial district that we got money for. That was kind of a catch-up thing, and so it was hard. So really, we've just been getting about 7,000 to 8,000, I know, increases a year. Which, if you know, average households pay 400, you know, just do math. Yeah. So election costs, because there's no primary, we're going to cut that in half at least. We might have to save more money if there's no write-in. So
I'm still a little confused why our population increased. We've added at least 100. I don't know why did we go down?
Oh, that was just an estimate. So we go down because, let's say last year the certified tax rate was a 711, but we got 740,000. That had to do with whenever you sell greenbelt land, you have to pay like 5 years of whatever you would have And so we got...
That commercial was in Greenville?
Yeah.
For years, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, all of it.
Totally makes sense.
Was that the smart, I think it was a smart piece.
Mm-hmm. And ours.
And our, and the Harvey piece.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was...
That affected
that gave us a little bump that, so. I already talked about adding an FTE for parks irrigation. The goal is that they help set up the irrigation, but then they can use them for the other items in the city the rest of the year when, if they're on the golf staff and they're closing in the winter, we'd rather have them doing some of the snow plow work and that kind of winter stuff. Alright, so. Orange, I'm going to go over this in more detail. And then some insurance updates. What we try to do is, because we don't really know who's going to stay and who's going to leave every year. If someone's in a family health plan, then we'll just have a family health plan budgeted for them. But if someone's single, we might budget for a couple, or if someone's a couple, we might budget for a family. So, but we had some turnover, and that affects
what theirs.
So that we're not caught off guard later in the year, some of these. So waste management passed along the following increases above natural growth, and that was $19,000 for recycling and $6,300 for garbage. So we didn't quite offset that with our revenue increases, but close. But what we did is recycling is a little bit with garbage and recycling in every city. Part of that goes to pay finance, admin, whatever. Or the admin part of it. It doesn't have to be paid through garbage recycling, but if it's not through that fee, you have to raise the money somehow if you're going to have that service. So coordinating when someone wants another garbage or doesn't want, wants the garbage taken away or wants recycling or whatever. There's usually more phone calls related to garbage, so that one has a little bit more of a, so the current prices on recycling in the prior year, and they've already raised their rates April 1st, but the current price was $6.90, and raising recycling to $9.25 is the Fort Wine Toter is the new price, and then proposed price. And our current price for garbage, we're really not changing. And then we're actually lowering the second garbage can price. There was a philosophy a few years ago that we were trying to encourage everyone to move to recycling. And so we kind of just, before my time, there was a markup on the garbage, but there wasn't any markup on recycling. And this kind of balances it out a little bit more.
Sorry, Cheryl, can I interrupt?
Yeah.
Cheryl's right that for a long time our garbage rates were subsidized, or our recycling rates were subsidized by the garbage rates. A couple years ago we made a change saying each service should pay for the actual cost of the service. In meeting with Blake, who's our representative from Waste Management, he's indicated that April, May, they're hoping was the absolute bottom of this lull in the recycling market. As China has refused to accept recycling loads with the higher contamination, these other facilities are coming online in Southeast Asia and in the United States that should see a small rebound in the recycling market. So we're going to be watching that, but it's just a hard time for recycling right now. It's the worst it's ever been.
Yeah. So, so we'll see where that. It's hard to project. And, you know, some people, the price is going to be similar for a second garbage can or the first recycling unit. But, you know, some people, that's, you know, their priority, then they can keep the recycling can on. But it's going to be more fair, is what we're proposing.
Good explanation about why you should recycle.
I just have some highlights from golf. My golf taking on additional responsibilities maintaining parks, we're able to reduce the subsidy. And not only for this year's budget, but in future years that were
going to need to increase
because of the additional parking park. We're able to minimize that. Also, it's like congressionally involved in that money and set aside some money for work on the bridge and path, but that's not enough. It's just to get us, and it's just to separate it from the normal repairs and maintenance budget so they don't get them confused.
We did not roll anything from the net next year.
From the net?
From the net.
No.
I'll absorb all that and
I think it's good. Yeah. Yeah, it's all absorbed. That's all absorbed in the capital projects fund. Yes, that was a fun surprise. But it looks great now. Harvey Park. Do you have any questions on this? What I wanted to let you know is it's going to look like a park. And it's going to look like a nice park.
It's looking pretty good down there.
Yeah, nice park. Or some curvy might have a street soon. So I think around July 8th, there's going to be playgrounds starting going. There's going to be the road. Between the 8th and the 15th, the road should be widened and resurfaced. There could be tennis courts, pickleball courts, basketball courts for around the middle of July. So you'll start to see stuff. But it's been slow because of the rain. But they already, today they were pouring a new path on the right side. So pretty exciting. So what can we fund, what can't we fund at this point? One, all the major notable things, bathrooms, parking, splash pad, landscaping, pavilions, picnic tables, And so the things that we're still working on funding, been working with a vendor that did the bites for Saratoga Springs pickleball courts that are much less than what we originally had proposed. The original lights for courts were 40 feet high and were like professional level lighting. These lights are still nice, but they're dark sky compliant. They go flat down and they're under 30 feet. And when you look at the park, actually, our street lights are 16 feet around there. And the next level for tennis courts is 8 feet down. And then the next level for pickleball is another 8 feet down. So from the street, these won't be any higher than. Plus, they have great cutoffs out of dark sky. So, they But we're working on being able to afford those. But in the meantime, we're trying to get the full positions in place because some of them go under sidewalks. We need to have them installed now so we don't have to tear out sidewalks that are the full basis. Especially down the pickleball courts. So the things that haven't been funded really, there might be some bleachers that we could do later for the baseball field. Some of the trail pavilions haven't been funded yet. Maintenance building wasn't funded, and like baseball, soccer field lights aren't funded. Custom trash cans, we're just using the dumpster and the waste management like we do at the other parks right now. So some of the things, if we have money, we'll try to get good park signage. Shade for some of our seniors. So, but any questions on the project, what's being done?
I feel like we're getting a good value for what we spent a lot of money, but I think we're getting a lot out of our dollars.
Thanks, Sean.
Thank you, and everything looking up.
I think that it is a reflection of the hard work that Charles has put into price matching and getting good deals for the city, and also the work that Jeff has done on making sure that things are done right. So I want to commend Charles and Jeff on the work they've done at Harvey Park. They've done excellent work.
It will be a great year-round place for people to gather, and that's what the hope is. So, water and sewer fund, we talked about that a little bit earlier, but the one change I made from our earlier presentation that Chandler did is not to raise the sewer rate at all. Based on we're able to cover our debt service coverage, we have no outstanding projects at the Canyon Road sewer project done. And before this year we had other things pending, but I'm not aware of anything right now in the next 10 years that needs to be done. So the two that are having increases, if you look at their revenues versus expenses, the revenues are less than what their expenses are. But overall, we're fine. It's just most of it's due to debt service. And that's just going to be that way for a while. There's because of the rain, some of the grading may be done this month. They're going to finish the grading for the park. There's a couple of places where they didn't have enough dirt. So then they removed some dirt from the baseball field. And make that grade actually better and then fill in a few spots where it's low. So. And then I think Public Works have a PRD project that they will be doing. So, road water pool. These are the items most related to the taking out the parks, and then the normal turnover we have in Public Works vehicles. And
so, three next year.
There is an increase to general fund, but overall the cost of the parks is less than it would have been. So,
gonna have to get a lot.
It just shifted from a contract to motor pool and staff wages. That's all I have. So,
I don't think there's any difference.
If you got anything in the budget that thought maybe not like that, or.
All right, I have to open the public hearing. Anybody here who wants to speak about the budget? Okay, we'll close the public hearing. There are no other questions from the council, then I'll take a motion.
I'll motion that we approve resolution number 26-2019B, a resolution. A resolution adopting the 2019-2020 fiscal year budget for the city of Sequoia.
Motion by Councilmember Ellsworth, is there a second?
I'll second.
Second by Councilmember Anderson. Councilmember Ellsworth.
Aye.
Councilmember Geddes.
Aye.
Councilmember Miller.
Aye.
Councilmember Anderson.
Aye.
Motion passes. It was a tough call, and having that in yellow did keep me on track.
Good.
All right, item 10, review action on the resolution certifying the calculated 2019-2020 real and personal property tax levy.
Just took the rate off the state's website, shows a $7,106 increase based on new growth. So the certified rate based on that is overall is 0.001737. Guys, have any questions about it?
Alright.
It's a nice stable source of revenue, but it doesn't quite go with the first one. At least it doesn't go down. That does.
There are no questions from the council?
I'll make a motion that we approve resolution number 6-26-2019C. A resolution setting the total property tax levy addressed upon real and personal property for general governmental purposes for the 2019-2020 tax year for the city of Cedar Hills, Utah.
Motion by Councilmember Anderson, is there a second?
I'll second.
Second by Councilmember Geddes. Councilmember Ellsworth.
Aye.
Councilmember Geddes.
Aye.
Councilmember Miller.
Aye.
Councilmember Anderson.
Aye.
Motion passes. So we'll move on to review action on the sustainability bond for outsourced Cedar Hills Utah Center Commercial Subdivision. Thank you, Shara.
Mayor and Council, the Cedar Hills Retail Development, the outsourced development, request the release of the durability retainer to the city goals on the completion of the 1 year durability period. Completed the inspection, the engineer certified that we're in compliance with our requirements. The staff is recommending that we accept public improvements and construction and approve release of the durability retainer. This is in the amount of $5,710.86 plus any accrued interest they have.
Did on legal services, engineering services,
Say that again.
Park maintenance.
Park maintenance.
Cemeteries.
Everything else. And it's been 4 years since we went out last month's bid for Kurt McConkey. This past year, Kurt McConkey has requested an increase in their fees in their monthly retainer. Their monthly retainer currently is at $5,800. They're asking for an increase of 20%. In that 4 years since the time that they were selected by the city as the city's attorney, there have been no increases, so they've been flat rate for the last 4 years. In addition, they've been asked to do a little bit more. They've been asked to attend the planning commission meetings, so they're in the planning commission. They've been asked to attend the mayor's and council meetings. But nonetheless, when there's been a request of this magnitude to increase the fees, it's something that the city has to.
Sorry, we can't have the door shut.
Thank you. Anytime there's an increase requested such as this, it's prudent to make sure that we're getting the deal that we need to get with the city. This is a lot of money. However, I will speak that Kurt McConkey has done a marvelous job for the city. They've been really excellent to work with. They have provided one of the good things about Kurt McConkey is that when you're with them, you have a depth and breadth of knowledge that they offer. So we've used them on a number of issues, and they always had an in-house attorney that has been able to assist us on whatever issue has come up. So they've been fantastic for me. Nonetheless, given that the request has been made, it's up to the council to direct staff to say, given that this request has come in, it's much larger than what we budgeted for, there could be a possibility of going out to bid. In 2015, in March, they were the highest bid, and we knew that going in. And I think that given that there were a number of large legal issues facing the city at the time, it was prudent to go with somebody that had that breadth and depth of knowledge. Times have changed, and we don't have nearly the amount of legal issues that we're facing, and they've been resolved to a great extent. So staff is coming to the city council I've discussed this with Mayor Reese, to talk about going up to get and seeing what else is out there, what other options the city may have. There may be some savings that the city can realize. However, if you feel like it's worth the cost of continuing to pay for the legal services with Kurt McConkey, there could be an increase there as well. So I think understanding the picture as we go out to possibly go out to bid on this, it's a request for qualifications. It's not a request for proposals. You don't have to go with the low bid. You can go with whatever bid you feel best meets the needs of the city. So given sometimes you have to go with a low bid. With professional services, you're right. It's anything that meets the needs of the city. But sometimes when you get a bid for work to be done, so any questions on this? Staff is seeking direction from the council. So there is a motion.
I know we don't have any pressing legal issues right now, but we could in the future. Okay. I mean, I'm all for saving money and looking out there, but if it comes down to the best qualified, that's a different story, right? So
I think on some qualifications, there's a number of firms that are qualified and can give good legal advice. A lot of legal issues you can pay for on the front end or you can pay for on the back end, but that's with litigation. So it's kind of outside the monthly retainer.
Mm-hmm.
So either way, whether or not we're going to be paying an hourly rate once the issue moves into litigation outside of that retainer, we're paying an hourly rate either way.
Mm-hmm.
It really comes down to the scope of what you want them to do within that retainer. Kurt McConkey's been very generous with their time with us. However, other firms, they said, we'll give you 20 hours a month. And that can include city council meetings, that can include a planning commission meeting, that can include work memos that you would have us do with time. How we use those hours is really up to us. Kurt McConkey's, like I said, they've been very generous with the amount of time they've given to the city.
So the direction that we're looking for really is, in a situation like this, with any contractor and service, whether it's legal
parking or whatever, when we have an increase like this one of 20%, do we want to at least the opportunity to go up to RFQ and see what our options are and then make a decision at that point as we have those RFQs come in and evaluate them, and if Kurt McConkey is the best option because we feel like we get the best value for them, even if it's the highest option, we can go with it. If we feel like there's another option that comes into the RFQ process that provides what we're looking for at a lower cost, we can make that change. The direction that we're looking for is the increase that's coming. Are you comfortable with us issuing the RFQ for us to explore those options? It's been almost 5 years since we've done something legal.
I think it's a responsible thing to do when we see something like this, just to make sure that we're taking care of our citizens and the city properly, to manage the money and see what we're matching our needs against. So I see no reason not to. I think it's actually a good thing to do.
I agree with that 100% on that. I absolutely feel like we've got tremendous service for David and now Joel. And I feel like they've saved us money. So I feel like I wouldn't have a problem giving them 20% if that's what it would be. But I think it's prudent to go out and get additional information just so we can see where they rise up. I mean, they weren't the lowest. I remember very distinctly they were not the lowest professional services. But they offered a big array of services that I think we realize that I think they saved the city hundreds of thousands of dollars. So I'm okay with this. We'll see if we're still making a decision. It doesn't mean we're at all unhappy with the
decision. Yeah, I think this is not a referendum on the work that Kirby County has done. They've been excellent.
It really is more of an informal policy that we've kind of taken with all of our services of there's an increase, we did the same thing with public safety. When there's an increase, we're going to at least explore our options and make sure that this is the right thing for us before we agree to it.
I agree with Councilor Councilman. Yeah, there's no complaints, but I think we owe it to our citizens to make sure that we're making the right choice, because we've made a choice in the past. Maybe it is. So I'm happy to get the RFQs. Happy to consider Kirk County and whoever may else submit and return them as a council who's best, who's got the best value, cost versus expertise and experience. Just weigh that out.
Sure. Yeah, I agree. 100%. I think it's a responsible thing to do. I mean, as we look at this budget, every penny makes a difference in the city our size, so it makes sense to go out and look at it, and if they turn out to be the best firm for the job, then that's what we'll feel, but I think that's a responsible thing to do.
All right, let me take a motion.
I'll let it make a motion that we direct staff to prepare and issue a request for qualifications for legal services.
Motion by Councilor Ellsworth, is there a second?
Second.
Second by Councilor Bittes, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
Joel, if you can hear me, you can come back in.
So moving on to item number 13, the special appeal process and board adjustment.
Well, one more item though, the RFQ is actually nearly prepared. We have a template from the last time. I anticipate that the process would take a couple of months to bid out, take those bids, and then bring them back to the council. Last time we had presentations from each bidder, and so we look forward to that opportunity. The last item is related to our appeal for your work adjustment. The city by state law is required to have an appeal authority to hear matters of interpretation code and variable applications for variances. Variances are a specific item that is dictated by state code. There's a number of requirements that have to be met, all of them have to be met in order for a variance to be granted. We've had, over the course of the last 2 or 3 years, we've seen an increase in the number of applications for variances, which is fine. But what I've noticed is that many of the communities around us, they use a specific land use attorney for matters of variance rather than lay people from the community. The difference is that land use law is very specific. It's very nuanced, and having an understanding of land use law requires some curriculum training. Lawyers are specialized in land use law. On these matters of variances, Kirby Conley, going back to the site, they've been very good to work with. Joel's pointing me to a number of his colleagues that specialize in land use and helping me to interpret some of these requests for variances. And they've done so in a way that helped me understand better, in ways I would not have come to myself, in conclusions I would not have come to myself. But they helped me understand some of the nuances of the applications. With that being said, staff is interested in pursuing a change in the appeal authority, and it's at least for variances. We'd like to possibly move away from a more adjustment on variances and work with a specific attorney that hears only land use variance applications. The other items that the Board of Adjustment are appeals on how the zoning is interpreted, whether or not they feel the staff is, if a resident feels the staff is misinterpreting code or misapplying code, they can appeal that decision to the Board of Adjustment. That might still be something that we have the Board of Adjustment for. Most communities around us, they've moved away from boards of adjustment with residents of the community, and they've established a hearing officer. So in this code, you've got, I just pulled two of them around us, Pleasant Grove and Highland Grove and Alpine Hall. They use hearing officers. There's never really qualified attorneys. So I'm interested in getting feedback from the council on pursuing this.
What's it do to speed up the process or does it?
It actually probably speed it up. Because the Board of Adjustment is not a board that meets regularly, unless they will set time they meet. It's a matter of sending, we get an application and we have 30 days to process that application by state law. We have to send out an email to the board saying, we've got an application, here's a couple days, send us your dates that you're available. Sometimes it's really easy, and sometimes it's not, just based on availability. The Board of Adjustment currently has 5 members, 2 of which are vacant. So if one person is missing, we can't have a meeting. That's a bit of a problem. The 3 members that are on the board, they've done an excellent job. They've really...
How often have they met?
Recently,
it's been long. In the first 5 years I was here, I think maybe they met once or twice. They met once or twice in the last year. So, like I said, we're seeing an uptick in the new applications for variances, and I think that might be just a reflection on residents becoming more aware of the processes that are available to them. And as staff, we tell them if they don't like an administrative decision or they don't like the zoning decision that was made, they have an avenue of recourse. They can appeal. And even from a Board of Adjustment decision, they can appeal. They can go to district court. But the way our code is set up on Board of Adjustment, they need to hear really, really, let me go back. If you remember the Rosegate issues, the Board of Adjustment, the way the SCARS code is written, the Board of Adjustment will hear the City Council decision. Really, any City Council decision that's appealed should go to court, not to the Board of Adjustment. So it really should be appeals from administrative decisions on the application code. So either way, our code needs to be updated. But this is a way to do it in a way that I feel strengthens the city, but also removes some consideration out of the variance. I've been in some Board of Adjustment meetings where this has happened a long time ago, where what was said was, well, I know this doesn't mean code, but you're my neighbor and I like you. Well, that's not how variance works. So it's a bad way to do business. So where variances require certain or specific items to be met, and that's not set by city code, but set by state code. Let me reiterate that. I feel like a land use authority would better serve the community.
I'm just going to reiterate a few. So Chandler and I have talked about this multiple times, and I think we all learn from our experience that Liner's law has changed quite a bit since 2006 in Utah. It's really it's good. I mean, it's really strengthened and it's very clear. But the hard thing about that is if you don't know what it is, if you're not a land use expert, then you can really lead this in astray. And we had Brent Bacon here doing that training, and it changes every year. And so what we want to make sure is if our appeal body makes a decision and then it goes to Brent Bacon, we feel like whoever that appeal person is who's made a decision has made it based on the same things that Brent Bacon would be looking at. And it's hard to ask volunteers in our community to stay up on land use law when it's, again, it's very dense and it's changing all the time. So protect the city, we felt it would be better to have somebody who, that's what they know.
So who pays for this?
That's a good question. I'm not totally sure of the answer, because my initial feeling should be that the applicant should pay the cost, that it shouldn't be something that's carried by the residents in general, that it should be passed on cost.
And if I was thinking the other side of the same coin, is do you have you're appealing to authority that's being paid for by the city, potentially, if it's not by as opposed to a volunteer board. But I spent a year on the Board of Adjustment for Utah County for variances. And civil attorneys, the county attorney's office would come and do a full presentation with the recommendation and go through the checklist of, you know, every qualifier that needed to be met. And, you do need some, there's a lot of depth to land use law, and you do need an attorney involved regardless. I think it's unreasonable to expect whoever volunteers. I know that two of them are attorneys, but they're not land use attorneys. So that's my question. Who's going to pay for this? But I don't have a problem if it's somebody that's well versed in land use law, taking a look and just seeing if it meets the requirements on variances.
So I have personal experience with a neighboring city that I just went to their report of appeals on a variance issue personally, and the city paid for it. And they're the one that denied the issue for me, and so they said my only option for the homeowners that I was building the house for, some option was to take it to this appeal authority. And they had just hired this attorney within the last month. So we were the guinea pig. And I feel like it probably worked. I mean, I wasn't happy with the outcome, but I think the process worked. And I think the city absorbed the cost, because it was a situation where we both had differing opinions as to what was right and what was wrong. And then the independent attorney, and you know, I can tell you who it was, I can dig it up, it doesn't really matter. But it was a true hearing, it was just like this. It was noticed, it was public, city staff was there, they made their case, we made our case. And he gave a written decision within 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But the city paid for it.
You know how much it was?
Probably not cheap.
Yeah.
If it was attorney's for his hours in the meeting, a little bit of discussion beforehand, and then his time to review and actually write an 8-page opinion, which is a little bit excessive, I thought.
And I think it goes back to that preventative mindset, which is it may be, we might be paying an attorney an hourly wage to do this, but if they are making decisions that they know are legally sound, does it save us in the long run from having to litigate this on a losing?
Mayor?
Yes.
There's been a lot of discussion, about justice. Everybody seems to have a criminal system, but also on economics and property rights, people should have rights that are respected as well. So there's should the government pay for all of it? Should the applicant pay for all of it? You can even have maybe a loser pay system. Or one way that I think everybody is to have some sort of kind of co-pay.
if it's free, then people might use it. But if they have to pay, I don't know, $100, that makes sure it's not trivial.
Sure.
And it doesn't, you know, waste resources. And especially with the economic right, that seems somewhat more reasonable. So there's a lot in there. Brian might have a more mature opinion on that. But this has been wrestled with in many other venues. Because if we make justice too expensive, then, you know, only the rich can get it.
And we do charge a fee now.
It's $100.
Yeah.
Oh. I mean, there's still, I think there still needs to be some skin in the game on that.
Sure.
It's part of it.
And I think in this case, the city of Vineyard, prior to putting this into effect, they made the city manager the person to make the decision. So it was all on him, so he's becoming.
Just do that, that's easy.
No, and he wasn't qualified or biased. He might be biased. I don't know. I mean, I think there was a good point in it.
There are some instances in our city code where my role is an appeal authority, but it's usually for citations, things of that nature. But I feel like this would be outside of the purview of the city manager.
Yeah. Although in my case, I think the city manager better make the decision.
So, staff is looking for direction. Are you guys fine with them doing some research on that?
Yeah. Is this worth our time exploring?
I think so.
My major concern was, how much is it cost to the city, and is it going to get abused? And that's kind of the answer. If we put some limits around it, appropriate limits, I think it'll be a very effective service. Getting some faster.
Sounds good. Okay,
you
get what you need.
I got what I need.
All right. That was our last item, so that was a motion to adjourn. I can't believe we got through 14 items.
I know.
That's awesome.
Motion
by Councilor Gittes. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Councilor Miller. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Back to that apple.